Welcome to the John Maxwell Executive Leadership Podcast, where our goal is to help you increase your reputation as a leader, increase your ability to influence others, and increase your ability to fully engage your team to deliver remarkable results. Hi, I'm Perry Holly, a John Maxwell facilitator and coach.
And I'm Chris Cody, Vice President with the John Maxwell Company. Welcome and thank you for joining. Just as a reminder, if you want to learn more about the five levels of leadership, which we really kind of emphasize and go in as a foundation for leadership cultures, or maybe John's 360-degree content, don't hesitate to visit johnmaxwellcompany.com/podcast. You can learn more about there. You can leave Perry and I a question or a comment, or even if you want to download the learner's guide that Perry has created to follow along today, please do that. Well, today's topic is reinforcing a leadership culture. Leaders leading leaders. And I love this title that you came up with, because we've spent the last couple podcasts talking about leadership culture and what it is and how to develop it. And I think it's left off at times because you have to reinforce it. It is something that is ongoing. It is fluid. And so we've been talking about this in previous weeks, and we've shared the importance of learning leadership across the organization, modeling leadership for others, growing leaders so you can have a leadership pipeline or a bench in order for it to be sustainable. So today we're going to look at the importance of high-level leaders leading lower-level leaders and how that can reinforce the culture of which is there.
Yes, I've always been fascinated by, since we teach that leadership is really about your influence, not your position.
Yeah.
The higher you go in the organization, you get further removed from the front lines and from the people actually affecting customers and clients and the team. And so can you extend your influence through other leaders? I think that's a critical piece of that. And I think a big part of establishing and maintaining a leadership culture, it really is how your second, third line leaders lead those who report to them. I believe you can undermine the best attempts at a leadership culture when your leadership team does not allow the leaders under them to lead. And that's really what got me on this. Are you doing things to undermine your great efforts at having a leadership culture? We're tanking them by doing things at the top level. So I want to get your thoughts, and I snuck this in because I didn't put it in the title, but I have five actions. I don't know if you didn't catch that, but I'm going to – you see what I'm doing here?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Five actions leaders can take to lead the leaders who report to them. And by the way, just so you don't turn – well, I'm not a top-line leader. If you're a first-line manager and only have individual contributors reporting to you, don't you want them to see themselves as leaders, even if they don't have the title or position of a leader? I think the five actions apply to a first-line leader just as much as it does anyone else.
Yeah, that is good. I love how the application of that, it doesn't matter where you're at in the organization based off the title that Perry and I have. This is a behavior that we would like to see modeled throughout the organization. Let me just back up just a minute, and because people are like, well, what is a leadership culture? How do you define that? We're going to give you some simple handles here, but for us, it's really an organization that values their people and the individual strengths and capabilities that they bring to the organization. And here's what we find. When you value those people, they value the organization. They value the culture that's there to a greater level. And so I want to encourage you to think about that. And what is the level of value that you're putting on people? And do they feel valued in your organization? Because if you do that, they will be engaged. You'll have higher engagement levels. That's going to drive to better performance. You're going to be able to serve your clients, your partners better. We like to talk about people over profits, and that is true. And I think that's really the essence of a leadership culture. And so just make sure that as a leader, as someone with influence inside the organization, that is true for your organization. Well, to start us off, I love this five, and I think our listeners do as well, because I think by the time they get to three, they go, oh, good, Perry and Chris are almost done. So at least they know where we're at. But let's talk about these five action leaders can take.
All right, number one of five actions, if you're a leader leading leaders, say that three times really fast. But number one, we talked about this in previous episodes on this culture topic, but you need to model, train, and coach the leaders that report to you.
Number two, empower the leaders who report to you. Now, this, I want to talk about this and spend just a minute here, because this is hard to do. Okay, we all have a little bit of a tendency to control that of which we are responsible for. Now, leaders, I'm not saying throw responsibility out the door. You are still obviously responsible, but empowering those that report to you is so hard to do. Matter of fact, I was having a conversation with Mark Cole. He and I have worked together for a long time, and we know our strengths and our weaknesses, and we were having this conversation just last week about this is something in order for our enterprise to go to the next level that he and I both need to work on. Because when we empower people, we're asking them to think for themselves, we're asking them to devise the plans, and then to allow them to execute on that. A lot of times, we say we want to empower people, we let them do that, but then we don't actually follow through on that. And so this, for me, is probably one of the toughest ones to do, is to be able to empower those that report to you. You're ultimately responsible, but you got to be able to trust them in order to empower them.
Yeah, we should probably do a deeper dive sometime on empowerment, because I'm finding in coaching calls, people like that word. It's a very leadership-y word. People like to talk about it, but I'm not sure a lot of us know how to do it. And what are the obstacles to empowering someone? Is it a trust issue? Is it a my own insecurities issue? What's going on? We could probably
dive absolutely.
More on that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's tough. Yeah.
You know, I worked for, when you talk about empowering, I worked for a CEO once. I felt like had it down. I felt empowered. We would all agree as a leadership team where we were going and the outcomes that we were responsible for, what we wanted to create. And then he released us to make it happen. He did, however, have a weekly one-on-one to really check progress against anything that I had declared were my most important tasks, things that we were, you know, I was working to get to that outcome. He would ask, how are you doing on your most important tasks? Do you need any help? But he did not try to micromanage me or try to tell me another way to do it. I mean, he was a high-level smart guy. He probably could have thought of 10 ways to do it. But he let me have the ball. I ran with it. And so I love that when I think about being empowered. I actually felt empowered. We didn't ever talk. Unless he needed something specific, I never heard from him. And then, except for our weekly one-on-one, it was on Mondays at 4. I knew I better be ready to tell where I've been and what I've been doing. But and he could see the results of that. So
yeah.
Number three, step back so they can step up. I think this
you
one sounds
this.
That's
yeah.
so hard
yeah.
to do, but you know, if you're the big boss, people have a tendency to step back so you can step up, and then you provide all the answers, and you gladly take the bait because, well, I'm the big boss, I have all the answers. When you can reverse that a bit and you step back, requiring them to step up, I think you get a much better understanding of where they are as leaders and how they think. And that just opens the door for all kinds of opportunities for growth.
Yeah, I love that. And I want to say this as you led us down this point over the last couple of sentences as you were kind of sharing with us, you have to set the expectation as a leader, okay? When you empower them, you have to set the expectation. When you step back, you have to set the expectation properly. In order to do that with success, one of the ways that John does this in our organization is he calls it the 10-80-10 rule. It's where he will have an idea. He will have a responsibility. He'll have whatever it might be, and he'll say, here's kind of where we're at. Here's the initial 10%. Now, go run, right, and develop the 80%, and when you get there, 90% complete, come back and let the leadership team, let me speak into that last 10%. And so it allows leaders to kind of cast the vision. Here's where we're going. Set the proper expectation. Now run. Now have autonomy. Go do what you do. Then let's come back and let's just up-level that. It may be changed. It may just be adding value to it. But in a way, that 10-80-10 is really doing well, the last two points, two and three, empower, and then what we were just talking about in order to step back so that people can step up. And we want people to have autonomy. You know, we hire people for the skill set right. and the gifts they bring, and then we want to try to control that. So, all right, number four, ask meaningful questions. There was this guy one time that wrote a book called Good Leaders Ask Great Questions.
I know him.
Right? You know him? And so I think that the better that we can become as leaders of asking questions, the more influence that we'll be able to have. But also, it's a natural progression for us to begin to develop and add value to our team.
Yeah, what do you think about that, though? You're a leader leading leaders. What is the value of asking the question? What's the opposite of that? Give me a little more on that, because I think you do this really well. And I think a lot of people shy away from, why would I ask questions? I give direction. I don't ask questions.
Now, asking questions, right, takes a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But I think it's so powerful because, number one, it allows you to understand how your team think.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And it allows you, when you understand that, it allows you to lead them more effectively. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Because everybody needs to be led a little bit differently. The second thing that I think it's so important, and why I say it takes a little bit of time, is that you are helping them think differently. You're helping them get to a certain solution. Mm-hmm. Versus, to your point, coming in saying, okay, look, here's the answer. Here's what we got to go do. If you allow them to think through that process themselves by asking the question, what you're doing is you're building a behavioral pattern in their mind that allows them to get there quicker next time by themselves, mm-hmm. maybe without even coming to you. And so I think that's the beauty behind it, is being able to sit in any type of meeting, any type of situation, and be able to ask questions that will lead you down where the team wants to go or where that individual wants to go.
Right. Well, I think about it with, you know, with our kids. I can tell my son what to do.
Right.
Or I can ask him what he thinks he should do, and ask him why he thinks he should do it, and ask him what are the risks in doing it that way, and what are the benefits in doing that way, and really get him thinking through what, because I can't be there all the time. Same thing with the people at work. I'm not going to be there while you do your job. But I have a vast amount of experience. I'd like to leverage my experience and learnings through you. But how can I get you to grab onto that and make it yours? If I tell you, it's mine. You just take mine. If it doesn't work, it's my fault. But if I can ask questions and get you to own it, it makes it yours, and you go do your job. And if it doesn't work, you figure it out.
Right.
And I just love that idea of developing that bit of curiosity around why people do what they do and how can you help them do it better.
Yeah.
The last one, number five, I just felt like fail. I called it failing forward. Of course, I know a guy that wrote a book.
Yeah, that's right. There's a common theme on this podcast.
Yes. It's one of John's books on failing forward. But the message applies, I think, when you're leading leaders, is that when you accept failure as part of learning to lead, I think people will take more risk. They'll try more new things. They'll learn faster than they would if you tried to maintain this perfect, mistake-free environment. And I want to get your comment on it. But I think if you set up, I did this as a parent. I did it as a first-line sales manager. I made myself look perfect, like I had done it right, and that's why I'm here. And no one wanted to confess their struggles or their failures, my children nor my sales associates.
Right.
And once I said, you know what, I messed that up as a teenager too, son. Come here. And go, did you really did? And then you tell a salesperson, I lost many big deals for that exact reason. Let's do an after-action review. All of a sudden, people, the barriers come down, and failure is not considered failure. It's considered a step forward.
Yeah, it goes to a word we talk about, authenticity, right, as a leader. Like, we all make mistakes and we all fail. It's funny because I was just listening to John yesterday. He is right now on a book tour, and Change Your World book is getting ready to come out, and he was teaching, and I've heard him say this 100 times, but it's so true. He said it's really not the experience, either successful or failure. It's really not the experience that's important, okay? So he just lumped in one sentence, it's okay to fail, and oh, it's great that if we were successful, it's great. That's not important to him. What's important is the evaluated experience, both from a failure standpoint and from a success standpoint. And so I think you have to be able to do that. And so just to piggyback what you were just saying is not only to say, man, I failed, but then what I loved you said, which was, hey, but let me tell you what I learned from that and why I lost that customer, right, why I made that mistake. And I think when you can share that, that's called standing on the shoulders of giants that have gone before you. And I think that's the power of accepting failure. Again, we do want more successes and failures, whatever. But I think if you go about it the right way and you evaluate all your experiences, you'll learn far more from your failures than you do your successes.
I completely agree. And I think before we close, add one more. Maybe we'll call it 5.5.
Okay, we've never done the five.
Have we ever done a 5.5?
No, but okay. I see where you're going with that. Okay, 2.5.
5.5 is when I think about leading leaders and reinforcing this leadership culture that I'm trying to build. A word that I had to learn the hard way a little bit, but I really talk about it a lot to the people we coach, is boundaries. Mm. And it can sound, boundaries can sound like a limitation you're putting on your leaders, but what you're really doing is setting them free to be empowered and work within, in an autonomous way, within a space that you have designed for them to work. And I think about a boundary, you know, my yard is small, but I have a fence around it, and I know that I can operate and do anything I want within that backyard. I can actually go outside of it, but I need to take care of my things first inside this space. And I just think that boundaries are something that we don't think about enough, and it actually frees me up. I don't have to worry about where the edges are here. Now, if I'm going to push an edge, I like that in a leader too, but I also want to set them free to operate in a certain space.
Yeah, I love that 5.5 that you added for boundaries. So, as we get ready to wrap up, let me just do this. Let me give you the 5.5, the five, and then the half that Perry gave you as you begin thinking about where you want to go, and how do we help sustain this leadership culture? How do we reinforce it? Number one, model, train, and coach. Number two, empower. Number three, step back so they can step up. Now, those two that I just said, two and three, again, remember, we've got to set proper expectations for this to work. John talks about the disappointment gap, and that gap is the difference between the expectations and reality. So don't set expectations that you're given this autonomy and letting them run and outside, and then all of a sudden, right, the reality is complete. You will have frustrated leaders, and you'll have a lot of disappointment. Number four, man, ask meaningful questions. Are you asking more than you're telling? Number five, it's okay, fail forward. Make sure we're evaluating that. And then 5.5, make sure you set the proper boundaries. So that's good. Thanks, Perry. I appreciate it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Chris, and thank you all for joining us. As Chris reminded you at the front, if you want to know more about the five levels, 360, see the learner guide. You'd like to leave us a comment or a question. If you like a topic that you'd like to hear us talk about, we always love hearing from you at johnmaxwellcompany.com/podcast. And as always, we're grateful that you'd be here with us. That's all today from the John Maxwell Executive Leadership Podcast.